This morning I want to begin talking about budgeting and then possibly also get into giving. We'll see how far I can get. As I look back on this, I should have really covered budgeting after working, before saving and investing, because really you can't save or invest if you don't budget, or it's pretty difficult. You won't get very far. But anyway, this is the order that it ended up being covered in, so it'll be okay. So probably the best definition of a budget that I've ever heard is from a man named John Maxwell. Some of you may have heard of him. He's a motivational speaker and a pretty smart guy. And he was quoted in Ramsey's book, The Total Money Makeover. And he said the following. He said, a budget is people telling their money where to go instead of wondering where it went. And I've mentioned this before, but I think that's a very succinct, wise, fun statement. A budget is people telling their money where to go instead of wondering where it went. Now, most people in our country wonder where it went. And they get to the end of the month and they're like, I don't have enough to finish paying my bills. What happened? Where did it all go? I made $3,000, $4,000, $10,000, whatever I made this month. I don't know where it went. I have no idea. I don't have any money left over, and I can't see that I have anything to show for it. Right? That's what most people do. But that's not what you want to do. You want to sit down at the beginning of the month, and you want to tell that money where to go. When you get to the end of the month, then you want to see where it went, and it should have gone where you told it to go. Because if it didn't, your money's controlling you. You're not controlling it. That's crucial. You've got to control your money, not let it control you. Our Lord Jesus taught the principle of budgeting when he used the illustration of the man that would build a big tower, and he would first sit down and count the cost and figure out how much it was going to cost, see if he had enough set aside to build it. And if he didn't, he was going to look like a fool. Luke 14:28-30. For which of you intending to build a tower sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? So this is basically a given. When Jesus says this, like, who of you would even think about building a tower without sitting down first to see if you have enough money left over to finish it? Like, who of you would even think about undertaking anything without first budgeting it out and planning it out? I mean, this is just a given, right? Who in their right mind would not budget for this? And just start out and think, well, we'll just see how it goes. Hopefully I'll have enough. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't. I'm not sure. I don't even know if I have enough bricks. But, you know, if I don't, I'll just make it a 3-story instead of a 4-story or whatever. I mean, who does that? You know, nobody does that. Nobody with any sense anyway. Lest happily, after he hath laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. See, the idea of debt is not even in this equation at all. Jesus didn't say, you know, we'll start the building program, and then if you run out, just go borrow the money from the bank. Like, this never even crossed his mind. This is not how you do things. You save up ahead of time, and then you do whatever you need to do. And that's the whole idea of a budget. And that's the beauty of what you call sinking funds. And I'll talk about sinking funds here later on today. This, in my view, is the way to live life. Live life with sinking funds. Now, you don't even know what I'm talking about, but you will. And you probably already do. You just don't know the term. So we'll get into that in a little bit. I couldn't really think of a lot of scripture that deals directly with budgeting. I was kind of racking my brain, and I was thinking about it. And I was hoping to have more Bible verses to give you to, you know, say, hey, you should budget. But then I got thinking about it. I'm like, well, actually, in a roundabout way, the scripture does talk about it a lot, because the scripture tells us to save, right? The foolish man spendeth it up. There's oil and treasure to be desired in the dwelling of the wise, and so on. Teaches us to save, teaches us to tithe. Or the Old Testament clearly taught tithing, like, you know, throughout the whole thing. So, I mean, tithing was a big part of the Old Testament, obviously. Giving to the poor, both New and Old Testament, teaches us to do that. Well, you can't do any of that stuff without budgeting. If you are like some fool that just as soon as he gets money, it's gone. Like, it is just in one, you know, hand to mouth. As soon as you get it, you spend it. You can't save. You can't give to the poor. You can't give to the Lord. you can't do any future planning whatsoever because you just spend everything as soon as it comes in. So just the very fact that the Bible tells us to give, to save, to help others out, things like that, tells us that we need to budget our money. When it comes in, we need to set aside part of it to give to the Lord. Set aside part of it to help out the poor. Set aside part of it to save for our future. Right? So it is implicitly taught, budgeting, that is, in the Scripture. Now, there are only two ways that I know of to build wealth, successfully, anyway. And that is, number one, by budgeting, and number two, by imposing artificial scarcity upon oneself. Those are the two ways to do it. Now, if you do both of them, you'll really be ahead. But if you do either one of them, you can do all right. I was reading in the book, The Millionaire Next Door, and I thought he had some, it was a really interesting thing that he brought out here. This is basically what nearly all millionaires do. Almost all millionaires do one of these two things. They either budget or they do the artificial scarcity. Let me read you the quote here. He said, "Do you plan your consumption spending according to a variety of food, clothing, and shelter categories each year?" How many people do that? Probably not too many, right? Most people don't plan their spending on these categories. Most people just kind of live, and they just buy whatever. I need food, I buy it. I need whatever, you know, whatever comes up, I just kind of spend it, whatever, you know, I don't really worry about it. If I need clothes, I buy them. If I need this, I buy it. Whatever I need, I just kind of buy it. I don't really think about it. Well, you're not thinking like a millionaire if that's the way you think. Mrs. Rule does. Mrs. Rule was a person that he interviewed, a millionaire. Mrs. Rule does. So do most millionaires. In fact, in our latest national survey of millionaires, we found that for every 100 millionaires who don't budget, there are about 120 who do. So if you do the math, that's about 55% of millionaires budget. Right? So every month, or at least they sit down at some point and budget out their money. A lot of them probably do it every month and budget for specific things. So the majority of them do. But as I was reading, my first thought was, that's not a real high percentage. I expected a lot more millionaires to be budgeters. So how did they become millionaires if they're not budgeting? So that was my thought. So I kept reading, like, the next sentence. That's always a good idea. When you have a question in the Bible, you ever do that? You ever reading along, you're like, what does that verse mean? You rack your brain, and then you read the next verse. You're like, oh, okay, that's what it means. Yeah. Sometimes it's just a good idea to read the next verse, or just the next line in the book. He says, "We anticipate your question about those millionaires who don't budget." That's exactly what my question was in my head. How did they become millionaires? How do they control spending? And here's the answer. And this just hit me like a ton of bricks. And it shouldn't have been surprising because it's like something that I've done my entire life. But it just kind of, the way that he phrased it, and I thought, wow, yeah, that's powerful. They create an artificial economic environment of scarcity for themselves and the other members of their household. And that made sense. I thought, yeah, that's how you do it. If you're not a budgeter, you have to do that. If you don't budget and you don't create an economic artificial environment of scarcity for yourself, you will be broke, guaranteed. You've got to do one of those two things. So essentially, if you have this guy and he's making, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $10,000, whatever a month, whatever the amount is, he's making this punch per month, he views himself as making less than that. If he makes $4,000 a month, he views himself as making, did I say five? If he makes $5,000 a month, he views himself as making $4,000. And in his mind, he only has $4,000 a month, period. Because that 20% goes toward investing or saving or whatever. And it just doesn't exist. And his mind is gone, right? He lives on the $4,000 a month. And not only in his mind, but as soon as he gets paid or gets income, he shaves off that percentage and it goes saving for the future. And it's gone. It doesn't exist. Right, and then he could technically be an idiot with the rest of his money and not budget it, not plan it out, as long as he didn't go into debt and just, you know, kind of live, you know, nonchalantly. It doesn't matter. He's put the 20% aside, right? It's already safe. So whatever he does with the rest doesn't really matter, right? Theoretically, you could do that like I said, it's best to do both. It's best to shave off the top and pretend like that money doesn't exist, and then economize and manage the rest of it, and then you really get ahead. More than half of non-budgeters invest first and spend the balance of their income. So of the non-budgeters, the 45%, more than half of them save first, invest first, and then they spend the rest. Many call this the, quote, pay yourself first, unquote, strategy. These people invest a minimum of 15% of their annual realized income before they pay the sellers of their food, clothes, homes, credit, and the like. And if you want to get ahead, that's what you do. You got to pay yourself first, except you pay God first. Pay God first, pay yourself next, and then you get ahead. But if you don't do it that way, if you pay yourself what's left over, if you pay yourself or your God what's left over, you're screwed. You're going to be broke the rest of your life. Now, like I said, I've done both of these things for my entire life, budgeting and imposing artificial economic environment of scarcity on myself. I told you quite a while ago that throughout my life, every time I would get a raise, I would just keep living on what I was living before, right? So I never changed my standard of living at all. And I always just kind of viewed myself living at that baseline level, and anything that came in above that just gets saved. That's what I did. Now, I'm not saying that I will live that way for the rest of my life. I'm not saying that anybody should live that way for the rest of your life. But until you get into a good financial position where you have no debt and everything's all paid off, until you get to baby step 7, as Ramsey would say, until you get to that point, keep the belt tight. Once you get to that point, then you can lighten up, right? You've lived like no other, so that later you can live like no other and give like no other. But what most people do is not that. Most people live like everybody else until they get way down the line and think, oh crap, I haven't planned at all, and now I really have to live like no other. I got to tighten the belt big time, right? Because now I'm at the end. Don't do it that way. Do it the other way. Enjoy your fun later. You think, well, what if I die and I never get to enjoy my money? Okay, so what? You go to heaven, you have riches beyond belief, and you didn't have the stressful life of living paycheck to paycheck, being in debt and being miserable your whole life, and you get to leave a nice inheritance to somebody else. So it's not a bad thing. Okay, so I think it's a really good idea to create a budget. And creating a budget will benefit you in several ways. Number one, it will keep you out of debt. If you have a budget, you will stay out of debt. That is, if you have a budget and you keep it. Right? You can write out a budget and then just not do anything, not keep it, not follow it, and you're not going to be any better off. So you have to actually get out Microsoft Excel or your budgeting app or even your pen and paper or however you like to do it, and you need to make a budget, and then you need to actually stick to the budget, right? It's, you know, faith without works is dead, being alone. So first of all, if you have a budget, it'll keep you out of debt. Secondly, it will help you to build wealth for the future. And thirdly, it will help you to enjoy the fruit of your labor, right? So it'll help you in many ways. Get out of debt, grow wealth for the future, and to enjoy your wealth now, right? If you have a budget. And the great thing is, especially with budgets, can be good. Budgets are good for both types of people. There's two types of people out there. There are spenders and savers. And pretty much everybody falls into one of the two categories, to some extent or the other. And usually in a marriage, typically one's a spender, one's a saver. If you're both savers, you're going to have, you know, a relatively boring life. And if you're both spenders, God help you, because you're going to be in trouble. You really got to exert some discipline intentionally. But a lot of times you have spenders and savers in the marriage. And both of them have there's benefits to being both. Spenders tend to be more generous, right? They tend to enjoy the fruit of their labor a little more. Savers, of course, tend to put more away for the future, right? So both of those things is good when they're balanced out. Well, being a budgeter will help you no matter which state you're in. If you're like a hyper saver, you can budget, like I've talked about, and I'll talk about later on today. You can budget out your fun money, your entertainment money, and your generosity money. And then you don't feel guilty about having fun because you've budgeted it out, right? I can go out and I can enjoy, I can go out to dinner. I can go out and I can go to a movie. I can go to a concert or whatever I want to do, right? I can give this gift to this person, right? And I don't have to feel guilty about it. Like, oh, I should be saving that because I've budgeted that. I've set that aside for fun or for generosity or for whatever. You don't have to feel guilty when you go out and pay $25,000 cash for a car, right? Or $50,000 cash for a car or whatever. Chances are you probably won't do that because you realize, you know, that's a lot of money to spend. I don't want to do that. But whatever, you won't feel bad when you spend that money because you have set it aside for that particular purpose. That's what the point of having a budget is. So it's good for savers. It's good for people that tend to be, you know, more cautious about life. But it's also good for spenders because you don't overspend on all these categories. You don't overspend on entertainment and eating out and vehicles and whatever else because you've set it aside ahead of time. You said, I'm going to spend this much and only this much. All right, so budgeting is good for everybody. If you create a budget, this will help you to tell your money where to go and then to see where it went. And there are four basic steps, I think, when it comes to budgeting. Now, there's a lot more to it, and I'll talk about a whole bunch of different categories, but four main categories, four main steps when it comes to budgeting. You want to remember this. Always pay God first. That's your tithing. I'm using tithing as a general term here, whether you 10% or not. If you don't 10%, you don't tithe, but I'm using that as more of a general term anyway. Always pay God first. That's the first thing you do. That's the first item of your budget. Pay yourself second, right? So God first, pay yourself second. That means savings. Pay yourself second doesn't mean I get to go out to eat, I get to buy myself new clothes. That's not what pay yourself means, okay? So in this context, pay yourself means saving for retirement, saving for the future, okay? So you pay God first, you pay yourself second. You pay for necessary things next, okay? That's things like food. That's what Ramsey calls the four walls. Food, shelter, utilities, and transportation. That doesn't mean a $75,000 truck, right? That means being able to get from point A to point B. Like, if you don't have transportation in this society, you're going to be broke and poor and, you know, unless you live in a city or something like that. So you pay for the necessary things next, and then you pay for the unnecessary and the fun things last, right? That's the order in which you budget. You pay God first, save for the future next, pay for the necessary things after that, and then fourthly, the unnecessary things and the fun things. That should be your order of priority. Now, most Americans do pretty much exactly the opposite of that. As soon as most Americans get paid, it's time to go to the bar, it's time to go to the restaurant, it's time to go out and have fun, it's time to go to the RV park or whatever, the off-road park or whatever they do. It cracks me up. I always see these guys towing their side-by-sides with their $80,000 truck and their $20,000 side-by-side. It's just like, to me, that's like the epitome of the American nightmare right there. You're like the blowing a bunch of money you don't have, entertaining the snot out of yourself, basically. And there's nothing wrong with either of those things. There's nothing wrong with having that stuff. There's nothing wrong with doing those things if you can afford it, right? And if it's not like the overarching thing in your life, right? But anytime I see those side-by-sides, it just kind of reminds me of good old America. So anyway, but this is the opposite. Like I said, most people, they do the pay for the unnecessary and the fun things first, right? That's the first item on, they don't have a budget, but that's the first thing that they do, right? They blow it on fun and entertainment and whatever else. And then they're like, oh man, I got to pay the rent or I'm going to get kicked out. So I better do that. I got to pay the electric bill or I'm going to be, you know, without lights. So I got to take care of that. I got to cut off this, you know, go into the bar every night. And then saving might be an afterthought if I happen to have anything left over, and then giving to God, forget about it. I mean, most Americans wouldn't even be a second thought. And if it is a second thought for a lot of churchgoers, it's, oh, you know, I had some money left over at the end of the month. I'll throw it in the plate or whatever. So most Americans do it completely the opposite of the way it should be done. Okay, so as far as creating your budget goes, like I said, you can do it the old-fashioned way. You can sit out with a pen and paper if you like. The disadvantage to the pen and paper is that it is not a dynamic system, okay? And what I mean by that is you make your budget and then you say, oh, darn it, I don't have enough money left over. I need to scratch out one and put in another. And then all of a sudden now that's going to mess up other things, right? And now if you're calculating like what percentage of my income did I put towards housing, what percentage? Now I got to recalculate all these things, you know, erase it all. There's a thing called Microsoft Excel on a thing called a computer. They came out about 30, 40 years ago. And they are very handy when it comes to this kind of thing. So I recommend, you know, maybe you might want to try that. That's what I like doing. That's what I just made another budget the other day and made it in Excel. And it's really nice because you can make out, you can put in your monthly income, and then you can extrapolate out from that your yearly income, or you can do it vice versa, depending. And then you can make each line, and you can have what you're allotting to that line item, that category per month, and then you can extrapolate that out with a simple equation to the year. And then you can figure out what your net income and your gross income is by subtracting off the taxes that you're paying. And then you can have a category to see what percentage of your income you're spending, of your net or your gross, that you're spending on each different category. So you can see how much I'm spending on housing, how much I'm spending on food, how much I'm spending on giving to the Lord, taxes, whatever, you know, every single item. And it all changes dynamically. Anytime you change something, it automatically, you know, the equations change everything. So that can be very helpful. Couples, married couples, should budget together, typically speaking. Usually one person is the financial person, right, in the marriage, but the couple should be together on this. The husband, of course, has the final say, but it's a good idea to not just have one person coming up with everything and then running everything, and the other person just completely oblivious to everything that's going on, all right? If you have a budget, you can sit down and you can determine this together. We're going to spend X amount or X percent on this category, on this category, on this category. And you budget it out and you both agree. This is what we're going to do. This will minimize a lot of marital strife, right? Because a lot of marital strife is about money. That's one of the biggest things that people fight about. But if you have a budget, there's really nothing to fight about, because once you have agreed on the budget, maybe you'll fight on the different line items of the budget, but at least if you can get that agreed upon, then it's a matter of, did you keep the covenant or not? Did you spend more money on this category than we both agreed that you would, right? And then it's really a matter of, there's no arbitrariness and there's no subjectivity to it. It's, you spent more on this category than we agreed, period. Like there's not, you know, I think this or I think that. It's here's what was supposed to be spent. You spent more. That's wrong. Let's not do that again. Now, I recommend using an app called the Spending app. There's another app also that I'm just trying out and getting used to. And it is superior in some ways, but the Spending app is a great place to start. My wife and I have used this for about 7 years almost, since we moved down here, as a matter of fact. And you can get it for iOS or Android. So either platform, just search Spending. If you need help finding the right one, I can help you out with that. And this app is for tracking your spending. It's not really for budgeting. You can't budget ahead of time in this app, but it tracks your spending. And if nothing else, it will show you at the end of the month where every dollar you spent went. That's if you actually put everything in the spending app. You have to, of course, do that. If you leave stuff out, then you're going to have an incomplete picture. And this is something that you would want to update every day. Every single time you spend money on anything, no matter what, if you buy a 50-cent candy bar, a $1.75 candy bar, or whatever. Whatever you spend, it doesn't matter how small or how big, it goes in the spending app. And it's free. It doesn't cost you anything. It's very helpful for somebody, like in my situation, where you don't have an income that's the same month to month, and you can see how you're doing at the end of every month and just make sure, you know, so maybe some month you'll be under a little bit, some month you'll be over a little bit, and you can see does it average out, you know, at the end of the year or something. It can be synced so that the data is shared on your and your spouse's phone, so you both can enter in expenses and it'll show up on the other one. You can enter each expense into a category, and this will help you to easily see where your money's going. Now, some of you might be a little afraid to do this because you might be a little afraid to find out where your money is actually going. Like, oh my, I had no idea that I was spending X amount of hundreds of dollars at coffee shops or at restaurants or at movies or whatever your fun thing is that you do. I don't know what people do for fun, but whatever it happens to be, wow, I had no idea I spent this much money on that, right? You'll be shocked sometimes. It's great. You can break it down as small a categories as you want. You can enter each expense into a category. I already said that. You'll see where your money's going. Every time you buy something, you want to get a receipt, put it in your wallet so that you'll be reminded to enter it into the spending app. Because what'll happen is, especially if you're paying cash, if it's on the credit card, you'll be able to see it as you pay off your credit card. I'll talk about that in a second. Or your debit card. But if you pay cash for anything, make sure you get a receipt. That's a good practice anyway. Put the receipt in your wallet or your purse, and then you'll be reminded to put the into the spending app. You won't forget. That's what I do. When you pay off your credit card balance daily, or when you go and look through your checking account daily to see what debits came out, if you use a debit card instead of a credit card, either one, and you should do that, you should pay off, I think, I say you should, I mean, this is my opinion, but it's my strong opinion, you should pay off your credit card daily. Like, paying your credit card off monthly, to me, is crazy, because you pull it up, and depending on what your budget is, you might have hundreds or even thousands of dollars on the thing, and you're like, I have no idea what I just spent money on, like, where did all this come from, what is it, I have... My spouse was clicking away on Amazon. I was clicking away on Amazon and eBay and this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, what in the world? I got $983 on this thing and I don't even know what's going on. Daily. Pay it off daily. Go in there and look at every single charge. For one thing, you'll be more careful about what you spend. For two, if somebody happened to hijack your card, you'll realize that, hey, there's all these charges on there I didn't know about. When you got $1,500 on at the end of the month, how would you know if somebody charged an extra few hundred bucks in there? You're not even paying attention, right? So do it daily. It's just a good practice to get into, I think. And when you do that, you can verify on the spending app, did I make sure everything's in there? So you look at your credit card, you know, on your mobile app or on your online banking. And you just go down through there and you look and make sure everything is on the spending app in the right category. Now, when you enter in, I just want to make sure I had a little note there. I wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything. Okay, so when you enter the income, your income into your app, into the spending app, be sure that you enter in your income tax as an expense, because you want to get a picture of your overall finances. And I think this is really important. Now, for people who are employed, people who are employees, most people don't even think about the taxes. The taxes just don't exist. It's just like the government takes that, and they don't even consider that an expense. And I'll talk about that here in a second. But you want to get into a habit of thinking about your taxes as an expense. For one thing, if more people did that, we wouldn't have the huge tax rates that we have now. We wouldn't have the huge government that we have now if people actually realize that they are paying the tax. It's not just like deducted out of their account and they don't even see it or something like that. So enter your income tax as an expense. This will also help you to see, you know, how much of your income is going to taxes. Now, for me, this goes without saying because I'm self-employed. So like when I get paid anytime, any money that I get, the second transaction that I make is to take a certain percentage of it and put it in the tax bank account. The second transaction. The first transaction is, you already know it, right? To the Lord. 10% to the Lord. That's the first transaction. Second transaction is to go to the tax account. So for me, taxes are just another expense. There is nothing special about taxes, except they're an enormous expense. Like, you know, but other than that, there's nothing special about them. Nothing special whatsoever. You want to remember that taxes are just like any other expense. They're no different than rent, house payments, insurance, utilities, groceries, fuel, medical expenses. Taxes are just another expense. That's it. Get that into your head. I know that's hard for employees after World War II to get that into their head, because since World War II, we've had withholding tax, and your taxes get automatically taken out of your paycheck. It didn't happen before World War II, and before World War I, there was no income tax, period. But before World War II, everybody, self-employed or not, they got a bill from the government at the end of the year, and they paid their taxes. You know why it's called a tax return? Because the government used to send you a bill. They used to send you a tax form to say, hey, this is what we think you owe, and return this to us. That's why it's called a tax return. Did you know that? That's why they're called tax returns. It didn't used to be up to you to voluntarily, you know, fill out this form or whatever. They used to send it to you, and you returned it to them. That doesn't happen anymore. But anyway, so taxes are just an expense. Your gross income before taxes is your income. And you want to get that through your head. Your gross income before taxes is your income. Most people think about their income as whatever their paycheck is, but that's not your income. Your income is your gross income before taxes. And an easy way to think about this, or an easy way to remember what your income is, what your actual income is, imagine if you went to an interview and you got offered this great job and the company offered you $100,000 a year, and that's a lot more than you're making right now, and you are elated about that. And you go home and you excitedly tell your wife, they just offered me $100,000 a year. That's your income. You don't go home and tell your wife, they just offered me $65,000 or $70,000 a year, and thinking, well, you know, I mean, the government's going to take out part of it, and the health insurance is going to take out part of it, and the 401k or whatever. No, no, you go home and say, they offered me $100,000, right? That's your income, not after all the deductions and all that, the taxes taken out and everything else. You start thinking like that, and you're going to think very differently about what the government's doing to you when you realize the amount of money they're taking from you. Self-employed people understand this very well, that taxes are just another expense, and that their income is the profit that they make before taxes are paid. Like I said, employees tend to view the amount of their paycheck as their income because the taxes are just automatically withheld. This is one of the reasons why our taxes are so high. If most people were self-employed and writing out a big fat check to the United States Treasury every 3 months, there would have been likely a tax revolt a long time ago. If everybody did what I and what other self-employed people do, there would have been a tax revolt long, long ago. But it's hidden and most people don't even think about it. So in your budget, when you calculate the percentage that you give to God, whatever that percentage is, and the percentage that you save for retirement, whatever that is, it should be calculated from your gross income before taxes, because that's your actual income. You don't calculate it after taxes. If you do that, you may as well calculate it after a bunch of other expenses, right? You calculate it based on your gross income. Now, getting back to the spending app, to your budgeting. Enter any other expenses that are automatically withheld from your paycheck, such as medical insurance premiums and 401k contributions, also into the spending app, because you want to get a big picture. At least I do. I want to see the big picture. I want to see where everything is going, including 401k contributions if I had them, or medical insurance premiums, because if a lot of that stuff's taken out automatically in your check too, and you don't realize how much you're spending. You're still spending that money, even though your employer is taking care of the, you know, actually removing it from your paycheck, you're still spending that. So you want to include that stuff in there too. Get your pay stub out and see what is being deducted and put that in your budget as well. That's what I think anyway. And remember to enter the money that you give to God as an expense too, because you want to see that in your budget. Now, you can set up in this app, you can set up automatic recurring expenses for expenses that are the same every month. So you can save yourself some time for things that don't change, that come out on the same day of the month and they're the same exact amount, like rent, mortgage payment, internet, life insurance. And there's probably other ones, like if you have subscriptions like Amazon or Netflix or whatever, probably your, I don't know, or cell phone bills, they're probably steady now. You don't get charged for minutes or anything like that. So they're probably the same, I guess. You know, whatever other bills that you have are the same, you can just set that up as automatic recurring transactions and save yourself a little time. So by using the spending app, you'll be able to see exactly where your money's going and how much you have left at the end of the month and at the end of the year. And the nice thing is it has pie charts in there and bar graphs. So you can look at it and you can see a pie chart of where, of percentage-wise, where all your money's going, you know, in the different categories or bar charts. So it's just nice to look at it. It's nice at the end of the year to look at it and say, how'd I do this year? You know, how was I, plus or minus? Hopefully you're plus. You know, and where did all my money go? So it's really handy. Now, there's another option, too. Ramsey Solutions, that's Dave Ramsey's company, they offer the what is called the Every Dollar app. And there's a free version of it and a paid version. The free version does not have all the charts and graphs and some of that stuff. And it also does not sync with your bank account. But the paid version does. So you can actually sync it up with your bank account, and it's got all the charts and graphs and other data there. And it allows you to budget your income at the beginning of every month. So this is more of, this keeps track of your spending like the spending app does, but it's also a budgeting app. So with the Every Dollar app, and I just started using it at the beginning of this month, I was interested in it, but I'm already using the spending app, and I didn't really want to have two different budgeting apps. It's already takes time to put stuff into it, but I wanted to get an idea of how this one worked. And so at the beginning of the month, you punch in your income, whatever your income's going to be. Now, for people that are on I don't want to say fixed income, that sounds like Social Security or something. I mean, it would be that too, but if you're on a salary, right, if your income's the same, it's very easy. You don't have to guess what your income's going to be. If you're somebody like me, you kind of, maybe I'll look back at my income last year, divide it by 12, and say, okay, roughly it's going to be this amount a month. It's not going to be exactly, but you know, I just guess at it and then have to update it at the end of the month to see what it actually was. But for people that are on salary or your income's the same, you know, it's easy peasy. Put your income in, and then you go down item by item, and you tell your money where to go. You tell it where to go. So I'm going to, this much is going to my mortgage. This much is going to, you know, if you have debt, you know, that would be, you know, take care of that first. But if you don't have debt, you know, this much is going to my entertainment fund. This much is going out to eat. This much is going for electricity. This much is going for car repairs. This much is going for house repairs. This much is going for property tax. This is going for whatever, every single item, clothing, you name it. You know, whatever it is you do, you can have as many categories as you want. And you tell it ahead of time. And you do so until there's no money left. So you allocate all the money before the month ever starts until you're at zero. So every single dollar that you have coming in that month, you have told where it's going to go. Now, sometimes you have to adjust FIRE as the month goes along. It doesn't turn out exactly like you thought. You know, something happened where, you know, you had to spend a little more on this than that. You know, you can move things around. So the nice thing about this app, and I just found this out last night, is that you can set up funds in this. So not just spending categories, but funds. And that would be what is called the sinking funds, okay? And so if you are setting, a sinking fund is a fund where you set a little bit of money aside, you put a little bit of money into it every month for planned larger expenses, right? Your property tax comes due at the end of the year. Your property tax is, let's just make it easy, is $1,200 a year. You put $100 a month into your property tax sinking fund. So at the end of the year, you've got $1,200 to pay your property tax, right? Your car insurance is $600 a month or $1,000 a month or whatever it is. You divide that by 12. You put that amount in the sinking fund every month. So if I owe $600 every 6 months, I put $100 in the car insurance fund, right, every month. And then when that bill comes due, I've got the money, right? That's called a sinking fund. I'm going to need a new car here in 5 years, a new to me car. I'm going to spend $20,000 on this car. Okay? Divide that out by 60 months, right? 5 years, 12 months. Divide that out by 60 months, and you put X amount of month per, or X amount of dollars per month, every month in the car fund, right? Sinking fund. 5 years comes along, you need the new car, you got the 20 grand, you buy it, right? You can do that. I'll talk about that here. I'll give you many examples of those here in a second. Well, the cool thing is, I hope I'm not boring you to death. This is really interesting to me anyway. In this app, you can set up these sinking funds. And what it does is it doesn't end up making your budget all wacky. Because if you didn't have the sinking funds, like you have in the spending app, there's no sinking funds. So if, for instance, like let's say I put $200 a month into a medical fund, right, for just medical expenses, doctor visits, dental visits, whatever, you know, co-pays and whatever. So maybe I put $200 a month into my medical fund, right? But maybe this month I didn't spend anything on the medic, you know, any medical. And maybe next month I spent $300, you know, on medical or something. Well, if you do it in the regular spending app and you put the $200 a month into the medical category, then you would not put the actual medical expense into the app because you've already allocated that money towards it. So you wouldn't put $200 in this month. And then if you spent $150 on medical expenses this month, you wouldn't put the $150 in there also, because then it looks like you spent $350 on medical expenses, right? Because you put the $200 that you put in the fund, and then you also put the $150 that you actually spent on the doctor visit, right? So it kind of, what I have to do with the spending app then is if it's $200 a month in medical, when I actually pay for medical expense, it doesn't go in the spending app, right? Because otherwise it would be, you'd be putting double the amount in there. Well, with the Ramsey app, with the Every Dollar, you'd put the $200 in the fund, in the medical fund. And then when you spend money on that, it gets deducted. You would select it getting deducted from the fund. So it doesn't mess up your monthly budget, right? So, like, imagine an easy example. Imagine you're using the spending app like I was, and you're putting $500 a month into the car fund, okay? We'll just say. And that looks all nice and clean for your budget. Well, then in a few years from now, when you buy a $20,000 car, if you put $20,000 down in the month of May, what's that going to look like for your budget? You know, I made X amount. I spent like 10 times my income or whatever. You know, I mean, it would just totally blow your budget out. It wouldn't make any sense, right? And if you weren't putting it into that, if you weren't noting down in the app that you put it in the spending fund, then you know, you'd have this enormous expense 1 month, which totally blows your budget out of the water. So anyway, with these funds, it's really cool because you can basically mimic what you're doing with your bank accounts that you have set up for these special funds. You can mimic that in the app. I'm probably getting into the weeds too deeply here, so I will move on. Okay, so I think this is really important. When you're budgeting, find a bank that will allow you to have many shares within one account. Okay, and I don't know how other banks work these days. I know the credit union that I've used since I was a kid, since I was basically 18, it's great. It'll allow you to have 8 shares per account. Shares are basically savings accounts within the account. So it'll allow you to have a checking and then 8 savings accounts, 7 savings accounts in each account. And then you can have additional accounts that are tied to that primary account that you can transfer between, you know, from one account to the other. And in each of those, you can have a checking account and 7 savings accounts. So having the primary and then 2 additional accounts, you can have 24 savings accounts, basically. And I think that's about the right amount to have. Now, you may think that's crazy, but as I list them out here, you'll understand why I think, you know, having 20-some is pretty good, I think, to be able to help to manage your money. So here are some of the suggested shares or accounts, if you want to call them that, shares to create. Now, maybe there's other banks. I hope there's other banks that do that, and maybe they don't. Maybe they have unlimited. It'd be great if you could just create 20 of them or whatever. But, you know, that would be, if you're looking for another bank, that would be like the one important thing that I would look for. Can I create multiple, as many shares as I want, different accounts, different, you know, accounts within this account that I can transfer money between. So the first one you want is God's money. This is where your tithe money, to use that term, goes. For me, it's 10%. This goes into God's money, and it never gets spent on anything else. For me to spend any money that's in that God's money bank account would be tantamount to me saying, you know what, times are tight, I need a little money, I'm going to go down the street and rob a bank. It would be tantamount for me, it'd be tantamount to that. Like that money, when it goes in that account, it belongs to God, period. Never does it get spent on me for anything. It gets spent on things that God says in his word, you know, get given to him. So that's the first one. The next one, and these aren't in any particular order, would be an emergency fund. This would be for unknown and unplanned expenses. Okay, so this would not be for a new car, because that should be a planned expense, right? Now, this could be if the motor blows up in your car and you hadn't planned on that at all. You know, maybe you got a brand new car, you got a 3-year-old car, and for whatever, the motor blows up or something. Well, you didn't plan on that, and rightly so. That could be an emergency fund. But this is, this isn't for, I'm thinking about redoing my kitchen. You know, dip into the emergency fund. That's not the emergency fund, right? This is for unknown, unplanned expenses. 3 to 6 months living expenses is recommended for this account. And I think it's best to have this one in a high-yield savings account. So there are some banks out there that offer high-yield savings accounts. I have an account with PNC Bank. I think all of you could probably get an account with PNC. The high yield, because they don't have local branches here as far as I know. So if they don't have local branches for whatever reason, they'll allow you to open up these high-yield savings accounts. It's currently paying 3.88, so almost 3.9%. You know, back when interest rates were a little higher, it was paying like 4.5 or something. It was paying almost what long-term CDs were. And the great thing is there's no minimum balance and there's no requirements. There's no, you don't have to leave it in there for any amount of time. It's just like any other bank account. You can put it in, take it out whenever you want, and it pays, almost 3.9%. So pretty good idea to have, that in that account so you can make a little interest on it. I think it's good to have an account, a share for just general savings, a share for checking. This would be your checking account. Now, this is what I do. A lot of this stuff I'm telling you is what I do, so, you do whatever you want. But for pretty much like my entire adult life, my zero balance in my checking account is $1,000. And what I mean by that is if there's $1,000 in there, that means that nothing's come in or gone out, right? That's the baseline. If I log in and I see there's $900 in there, I know that there was a $100 expense that got deducted or something. If I log in and there's $1,100 in there, I know that there was a $100 deposit made from somewhere for whatever reason, right? So I always log in. If it's $1,000, I don't have to do anything. If it's more or less than $1,000, I got to move some money around. I either got to move money from the bill money account into there to pay for whatever that expense was, or I got to move that extra money out of the checking into the bill money, and then it gets distributed to, the Lord, the tax man, and the whatever else. So $1,000 zero balance. This will keep you from overdrawing your account, for one thing, if it's enough, depending on if you have huge amounts coming out regularly, then you might want more than $1,000 in your zero balance. But then, of course, I have overdraft protection, so you wouldn't have to have that for overdraft. But I don't like, even if you have overdraft protection, I don't like logging in and seeing zero in the checking account balance and then thinking, okay, what other account did it just take it from? And I don't like that at all. So, $1,000 zero balance is what I like to do. Then a bill money share. So for me, this is my operating fund. Okay. So when money comes in, I usually with the banking app, if it's a check, I just put it directly into the bill money. I skip the saving or skip the checking altogether. Just keeps the checking account cleaner. But the bill money is where bills get paid from, right? All the, rent, insurance, utilities, you name it, whatever. So that's my operating fund. I don't use the checking account for that. The checking account, like I said, just that's where the things actually get deducted. But then if $100 gets deducted from checking to go to the electricity company, then $100 gets moved from bill money to the checking. Now it's back at $1,000. So just keeps things clean. Generosity fund. I think this is a good thing to have. Now, this is different than God's money. This would be money that you set aside every month. This could be a certain amount, a certain percentage, whatever you wanted to do. But this would be money that you use to be generous toward others, right? To buy gifts for people, to do nice things for people. Could be to support causes that you believe in, support organizations that you believe in, you know, give to get on donor C and send money to some poor, kid over there in Zimbabwe or something that needs an eye surgery or whatever, you know, I'm just making stuff up. But this would be your generosity fund. And then a fund money fund. I think that's really important. This could be for going out to eat or entertainment, or maybe you want to have two funds. Maybe you want to have a going out to eat and an entertainment fund and keep those things separate, however you want to do that. This, I think, is best to do in a cash envelope. And this is what we've been doing for a while now. That money that I use for fund money, at the beginning of the month, I take out X amount of cash. I put it in a literal envelope sitting on the dresser, and that's what's there for going out to eat for that month. And that's it. And I keep a tally of it. When I take anything out, you know, I write how much is left on the envelope. And, you know, if it's the middle of the month and you want to go out to eat, okay, fine. But just know there's only X amount left, and that means there's not going to be left a whole lot left for the rest of the month. And when you get to the rest of the month, you're like, yeah, maybe you're on the 25th, and you're like, oh, I'd like to go out to eat. Yeah, there's $17 in there. It's going to have to be something pretty darn cheap. I guess it's going to be a coffee shop, visit this time or whatever. That is a great method to control your spending. I highly recommend it. And I found that the cash envelope is just, even better than having that bank account there for me. I really like doing that. And then you can have a fund for the husband's fund money. This would be money that the husband can just spend on whatever he wants. Okay, and then a wife's fund money account. You know, she can spend whatever she wants, right? And this is agreed upon ahead of time, right? And then there's no fighting about it. The wife wants to go out and buy a Gucci purse, and she saved up her fund money for 6 months or whatever, and the husband says, that's just stupid. Don't say that's stupid. It doesn't matter. She can spend it on whatever she wants, right? And the husband can spend it on whatever he wants. But I would not make your husband and wife fund money your checking account. Or guess what? You're going to spend a lot more money than you intended to spend. Budget that out. And then a vacation and a travel fund, right? It'd be the same thing, vacation/travel. And again, this should be a sinking. When I say should be, I'm talking about my opinion. You get it, right? When I say this should be, I'm talking opinion here. This is how I do things. You don't have to do it this way, but in my opinion, okay? This should be a sinking fund, right? So maybe you put $100 a month or $200 or $300 or whatever you put, but you put a set amount per month in the vacation fund every month or every time you get paid. Then summertime comes, you've got the money to go on vacation. If you've got $2,000 in there, well, that's the vacation you're going to take. And if that doesn't cover everything you want to do and where you want to go and flights and rental cars and whatever else, well, guess what? I guess we're driving somewhere, and maybe we're going to go for 5 days instead of seven, or 2 days instead of five, or whatever, right? So you keep it within the bounds of that vacation fund. Don't take vacations out of your checking account. That's craziness. And then income tax fund. Now, this, for if you're an employee, you probably don't need to worry about this, as long as you have enough taken out of your check, you know, on your W-4. You probably don't need to worry about this. I guess if you wanted to get one over on the government a little bit, you could fill out your W-4 and say you have, let's see, how would that work? Would you say more or less? Anyway, fill it out so that they don't take any money from you at all. And then you could save that money in a high-yield savings account and build interest on that money. And then at the end of the year, you could pay it back to the government, and you could get a little bit of interest on that money. If you wanted to do that. Most people don't. What you don't want to do is do the opposite and mark down that I've got 18 kids so that they take out 30% of my income, and then I get some big fat check at the end of the year as a refund, because you just gave the government an interest-free loan, is what you did. Now, that's a bad way to manage money, but in some cases, there are actually bad investments that would be good for some people. If you are completely irresponsible and incapable of saving money, it's a great idea to mark 18 kids on the W-4, have the government take out crazy amounts of money, and then get that big refund check at the end of the year if you can somehow manage to get yourself to save it and not spend it, right? So it's a bad financial move, but it's actually a good financial move for somebody that's completely irresponsible and incapable of saving money, right? It's like whole life insurance. Bad financial move, not good at all, but if you are incapable of saving for retirement, buy yourself a whole life policy. You're not going to do nearly as well as you would by just buying a term life and then investing the rest and all that. But if you're incapable of being responsible, buy yourself a whole life policy. At least you'll have something when you die. You know, so there are bad investments that are actually good for some people. But I'm not recommending either of those things. I recommend being responsible and doing what will benefit you the most. But property tax fund. Now, for me, I just have income and property lumped into one fund because my property tax is like a whopping $68 a year for my old clunker car for personal property tax. That's it. When we own a house, Lord willing, I'll separate those out, have property tax fund and income tax fund. That'll be different. But this, again, should be a sinking fund for your taxes. If you owe $3,600 a year in property tax, you put $300 per month in the property tax fund every month. Then when the property tax comes bill, or when the property tax bill comes due, you don't have to worry about where the money's coming from. Car fund. So these are all separate bank accounts, like I said, all under the umbrella of one main bank account. Car fund, again, sinking fund. Put a set amount of money, whether it's, you know, $300, $400, $500, if you really want a nice car, $1,000 a month, or whatever you want, whatever kind of car you want. Put that amount of money per month, figure out how long your current car will reasonably last, figure out how much you're going to need to buy that car with cash. Medical fund. Again, I recommend a sinking fund for this one. You can kind of get an idea, maybe look over the last year or two, figure out how much are our medical expenses roughly, add a little bit to it, put that in a sinking fund. You know, maybe you're putting a couple hundred, $300 a month, whatever. Now, that's not to pay your medical insurance or anything. That would be for MRIs, things that aren't covered, doctor's visits that aren't covered. I mean, for me, nothing's covered, but or nothing except for major stuff. But anyway, you know, whatever. I think it's a good idea to have enough in that fund. Now, maybe you wouldn't agree, but to cover your out-of-pocket max. And then, you know, I'm good, right? If I got my out-of-pocket max covered, whatever that is, in some of these policies, that's a lot of money, then it doesn't matter what happens to me. I mean, I could have open heart surgery and colon cancer and a double leg amputation all in the same year, and I'm good, right? I mean, you're not good, actually. You're in terrible health, and you know you probably wish you're dead. But the point is, I don't have to worry about the medical bills because my out-of-pocket max is in the medical fund, right? It's already there. Now, some people, you could say you could use the, you know, the emergency fund for that, but, you know, to each his own. College fund. You know, if you have children and you want to send them to college, or you might want to send them to college, or, you know, whatever, you can set this up. It would probably be best if you're going that route to do one of these tax-advantaged accounts, like I think it's called a 519 or 520, or I forget what it's called. But anyway, it's kind of like a 401k for college kind of idea. It's tax-free and deferred and all that. But anyway, that would be another fund to set up. Again, sinking fund, you know, X amount, figure out how much you think college is going to cost in 18 years from now, and then start putting that amount per month in there if you want to pay for your children's college or help. Children's savings account. You know, I know people that have done this. You know, as soon as they have a child, they start putting X amount per month into this child savings account. When the time comes, the kid could use it for college or educational expenses or trade school or starting his own business or down payment on a house or whatever, you know, so that could be another one. House fund. This could be for saving for a house if you don't have one, or saving for a down payment for a house if you don't have one, or it could be for maintenance for an existing house or for appliances, you know, any home-related expenses. Once again, sinking fund. Figure out approximately, and I'll cover more of this later in the study, and I did some research and reading about how much home maintenance costs, and they'll give you like percentages, you know, it'll roughly cost you X amount of percentage of the home's value, which you should figure in, you know, over time for home maintenance. So anyway, figure out basically, you know, what you think it's going to cost you. You know, look at the age of your roof, the age of your HVAC, the age of anything else, and say, okay, you know, this roof's going to cost me $15,000. This HVAC's going to cost me $10,000. This is going to cost me. Figure it all out for the next 20 years or whatever. Divide it out how many months it is. Start putting that much per month in there or whatever, you know, so in the sinking fund. And then retirement. Now, this would usually be like in retirement accounts, like the 401ks and IRAs. So, you know, you might not have this in your actual bank account. But again, it would be a sinking fund, X amount, X percent or X amount per month. Another one that I just started here within a year ago is an electronics fund for laptops, phones, you know, more expensive electronics that, you know, you just put, instead of paying that to the cell phone provider or putting it on your credit card or paying monthly payments to somebody, pay monthly payments to yourself. Put 30, 40, 50 bucks a month, whatever you need to, figure it out. How long does my laptop last? Mine usually lasts about 10 years. How much do they cost? I don't know, around $1,000. How long does an iPhone last? Probably 5 years, right? How much does that cost? 600, 1300, depending how crazy one you go with or whatever. Okay, so I'm going to need 2 iPhones and 2 laptops in the next 10 years. How much is that going to be? Divide it out per month. Put that much per month in the electronics fund. Sinking fund. And then a groceries fund. Now, I recommend cash envelope. I think where you can pay cash, pay cash. If it's an in-person transaction and not on the internet, pay cash. That's kind of my rule of thumb for the most part. Anything that I do in person, I pay cash. Anything on the internet, obviously you have to use a credit card or a debit card if you go that route. But groceries, do the envelope thing. Budget that out, X amount per month. I give my wife X amount per month for groceries, and it's cash, and that's what she's got. And that's, you know, if you, you know, try not to go over it. Sometimes you do. And what we actually have is we have another cash fund for grocery surplus. So if she has, $20 left over at the end of the month, that $20 goes into grocery surplus. If maybe next month she goes over $20, that comes out of the $20 grocery surplus and pays for the, you know, the extra that month. That will greatly keep your grocery bill in check. If your grocery fund is your checking account, and you go grocery shopping whenever you're hungry, you're going to be a poor man. I'm going to tell you that much right now. Go grocery shopping on a full stomach with cash, okay? And you'll do all right. And then a clothing fund. Same thing. I think, you know, you could do a sinking fund, or you could just throw a little in there when you feel like it or whatever when it gets low. But, you know, sinking fund. Figure out how much clothing is going to cost. For me, it's probably like 50 bucks a year or something. I don't spend hardly any money on clothing. But whatever it is, put that much per month in the sinking fund. That would be another one to use the cash envelope for as well. So if you put a certain percentage or dollar amount in each of these accounts every paycheck or every month, then you're going to have that money set aside for these kind of expenses. And then guess what? When your laptop blows up, who cares? Go to the electronics fund. When the car breaks down, who cares? Go to the car fund, right? When the dishwasher blows up, who cares? Go to the home maintenance fund, right? I shouldn't say who cares, but it's not a big deal. It's no longer a catastrophe. It stinks. I don't like it, but it's not the end of the world, right? When the property taxes come due, I've already got the money. When the car insurance comes due, I've already got the money and I can pay it every 6 months instead of every month. And you save money doing that, right? When you pay your car insurance every 6 months instead of every month, right? This just makes so much sense to me. It makes life so much easier. Having these different shares will serve two purposes. It will ensure that funds are available for larger periodic expenses such as vacations, tax bills, car purchases or repair, medical emergencies, biannual car insurance payments, which I said, you know, will save you money over monthly, house repairs, new laptops, new phones, all this stuff. The money's just there. So easy. And you just budget it. Just put it into the account every month. You can do, nowadays it's so easy, you can have automatic transfers happen, right? You get paid on the 15th, have an automatic transfer happen from your bill, in my case, my bill money account to car insurance, to electronics fund, to car fund, to whatever, you know, automatic transfers. It's you know, makes it really simple. And it will also ensure that you don't overspend on things like going out to eat or entertainment or clothes or buying junk you don't need on Amazon or elsewhere. So it serves two functions. Number one, you got the money there when you need it to buy things. You don't have to put it on a credit card. You don't have to go into debt. You don't have to be stressed out over it. And secondly, it will curtail your spending habits, right? Because like I said, on the 25th, I'd really like to go out to eat. And you look at the envelope and there's $6 in there. I ain't going out to eat, you know? If you didn't have the spending envelope, you didn't set that aside, I don't think we've gone out to eat very much this month, have we? I don't remember. Okay, let's go out again, you know? That's what happens. And it makes fun purchases actually fun. And it makes frustrating expenses not a big deal. It makes fun purchases actually fun. Because then you can go out and you can drop that $25,000 on that car that you've been saving up for, and you don't have to feel guilty about it. You're like, oh man, that was a lot of money. I don't know if I should have spent that. What if, you know? No, I set it aside for that purpose. I can spend it and I don't have to feel bad about it. I can go out to eat. I don't have to feel bad about it. I don't have to feel guilty about it. Oh, maybe I could save this money. I could do something else with it, right? It can make fun purchases and fun activities actually fun. All right, well, I didn't get to giving. So next time, Lord willing, I will get to giving. And then we're going to look at giving, the blessing of it. We're going to look at giving to God. We're going to look at giving to the poor. And we're going to look at generosity. But that's coming. That's going to be a few weeks. So anyway, next time we'll get to giving. And thank you for your kind and patient attention this morning.